I'm very happy to welcome back my next guest. He is Dr. Bud Labatan, a physician and investor who has produced books related to value investing as practiced by Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger. He's written several books, including The Four Filters Invention and most recently, Illustrated Valuations. I reviewed The Four Filters book with him on previous segment years ago, and both of these books are important books for someone who wants to be a more educated investor. Hey, Bud, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Steve. Good morning.
Hi. Hey, this new book, Illustrated Valuations, takes us under the hood on the thinking behind the great success of Buffett and Munger, and it opens up some of the math used to calculate the rates of return, and we're going to get into that math a little bit. Why did you write this book just now?
It was an opportunity to show imagery in a book for people. I have a friend in Evansville, Dr. Rene Murillo, and he and I talk a lot about stocks. And I was showing him my self-built Stocks Calc software for Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And then the thought occurred to me that if I could take pictures of the actual calculations and put them into different chapters, it could be helpful to folks who don't routinely do these type of estimations.
Okay. Yeah, I think you're right. You know, it's 12 very succinct chapters, and some of the chapters describe the philosophy of buying good quality businesses. It also takes us through a number of companies like Apple and Coke and Disney and others that, you know, show us how do you calculate whether something is overpriced or a fair value or undervalued. Why did you pick those companies? Why Apple? Why Coke? Why Disney?
First of all, Apple, because it is talked about a lot currently, and it is one of the recent major acquisitions of Berkshire Hathaway in terms of stock. And so I decided just to do a valuation on that and then see what the scenario on that one would be at a current valuation, which occurred on May 6th, and then also do an estimation to see what would happen to the value of the stock with a stock buyback. So that chapter does include a section on a hypothetical buyback.
And we're talking about May 6, 2019, if we do decide to air this show at a later date. Particularly when it comes to Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, I think choosing Apple is a good example. The reason? Munger and Buffett have stayed away from companies that don't have regular earnings and are subjects to kind of huge ebbs and flows and a lot of competition. So he's shied away from technology companies, but he has chosen Apple. Why do you think he chose Apple, Bud?
He recently stated that Apple, in his mind, has become a consumer brand and has a lot of brand loyalty. I think he got the information through his subsidiary, Nebraska Furniture Mart, and seeing his grandchildren and other people being so loyal to Apple products.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So he felt that they have this big moat around them and that there are other businesses that Apple is comprised of are solid enough and steady enough that he doesn't have to worry too much about competition or the loss of this moat, so to speak. Okay, so you looked at the Apple numbers, and we can't really get into too much of the weeds here, but the first thing that you look at is how much Apple makes, and you use a number called the free cash flow number. Describe what free cash flow is to us.
Sure. In simplest terms, the free cash flow is the amount of free cash that's generated after paying all the current bills.
Okay. So how would that be for me as a person looking at my own budget? What would that mean to me?
To you, that would mean paying the mortgage, the overhead expenses. It's the money that you take home and you could deposit in your own account.
It's the money left over. And in the case of a business, after all the salaries are paid and other necessities to keep the business running, this is the cash that's kind of left over, the cash flow that's left over. So you take that number and you have to kind of figure out a rate of growth. How much is that number going to increase over time? In your example here, you have 10%. Annual growth. How do you determine? I mean, it's just a big guess, isn't it?
Yes, it is a bit of a guess. And with Apple's numbers from the past, the rate of growth has been tremendously higher. Mm-hmm. The reason I use 10 is because 10 seems to be the number that Buffett aims for a 10% return. You see that number recur in a lot of his writings. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that is a number that is reasonable. Apple can certainly continue to hit numbers above 10, but I just went conservatively on this one.
And let me say that when you're making these calculations, even a 1% change in the growth number can have vastly different results. So these numbers are, they're a range. You know, you're trying to calculate the value of a business, and there's a lot of things that you have to take into account, a lot of variables that are really unknown, the rate of inflation, the rate of interest rates, and things like this. So this is your best shot at kind of getting a sense of what something is worth. So we have this free cash flow number. We're growing it at 10%. And now we want to try to find out what that value would be and then divide it by the number of shares outstanding so we can figure out what the price per share would be. Take us through that a bit.
Sure. The model I use is a generic two-stage discounted cash flow model, which readers can read about. The thing I tell folks is that this is a generic model. What I do is grow it out for 10 years. I take the free cash flow from year 10, and I just use that same number for year 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15. And the reason for doing that is to enforce a little bit of conservatism. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I advise folks is that if you're going to start doing this on your own, you can either stretch or compress the model. In other words, if you have a company like Coca-Cola that's been around over 100 years and it can outperform over a long period of time, your second stage could easily be stretched to a 20-year model, which there is an example in the book of that particular example. If you have a subpar or mediocre company, then you have to put a lower front growth rate and maybe even, depending on what you think the life cycle of that business will be, then you'd have to use a shorter time period. But for me, a 15-year two-stage model has been fairly effective.
Yeah, so a rate of growth for the first 10 years and then no earnings growth after that. I like what you said. It imposes a certain conservatism on the model because, you know, trees don't grow to the sky.
Right.
You even said before Apple has been growing at a much faster rate than 10%, but eventually by the sheer size of a company, the growth rate has got to decrease over time. There's only so much space that can be taken up.
That's right. Just like Berkshire Hathaway. It's grown, 18.5%, but eventually that rate of growth is going to slow down.
Exactly.
You have to account for the slowdown.
Okay, so we got that. And then we come up with a number, like, you know, the current stock price back in May was about $198 a share. And then you come up with a number based on this calculation as to whether, based on these factors, the intrinsic value of the company is higher or lower than the current value of the company, right?
Right. And on that day, I came up with an intrinsic value estimate of, I believe it was $266 per share, which would have made it about a 25% bargain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially when you counted in other factors like they're buying back their own stock and things like that, which we definitely don't have time to get into.
So we'll tease the readers into buying the book and reading up on that portion.
No, this is a book that I would definitely recommend. If anybody's interested in learning more about this and kind of, it's a good start to get into the weeds and to figure out how these calculations are made. How are businesses valued? And then as a buyer of a business, how do I know whether I'm going to pay a good price or I'm paying too high a price? These are such important things in the business world that have nothing to do with stocks, but they also work quite well in the stock market.
Right. And they get pictures and images on top of just reading paragraph after paragraph.
The other company I want to mention, and by the way, we don't recommend any of these companies. This is just for example's sake only.
Yes, for learning.
Is Coca-Cola. Many people think it's kind of a sugar water business. I mean, really, when you think about it, they make sugar water with a little coloring. But as you said, they've been in business 100 years. They're doing something right. But one of the aspects that you brought up in your book about Coca-Cola was the increase in dividends over time. This idea that it's like having a bond, and normally bonds pay a fixed rate. But this is like having a bond, and that fixed rate, by the way, is called a coupon. It's like having a bond with a rising coupon. Take us through that.
Yes. Over the years, Coca-Cola has been able to progressively increase its dividend, buy back shares, maintain its brand advantage, its moat in worldwide distribution, its efficiency in terms of free cash flow production per bottle of Coke. It can actually make Coca-Cola cheaper than Pepsi can make Pepsi. So it's sort of a combination of factors. And when towards the end of this chapter, when I add up all the amounts of dividends paid, just the period from 1988 to 2018, this company had paid dividends in excess of $5,467,000,000 to Berkshire Hathaway.
And they only paid about $1.2 billion for it, $1.3 billion, right?
Right, right.
So in dividends alone, they've received 5 times their investment, 4 to 5 times their investment.
That's right.
Dividends alone. So this idea that in the future, because of rising dividends, this idea of yield on costs, this is something we talk about a lot, you know, in my investment advisory practice, this yield on costs. If you look at the S&P 500 10 years ago, we've done some numbers, the dividend yield was about 3%. 10 years later, because of the rising dividend of the S&P 500, the yield is just under 9% based upon your original purchase 10 years ago. This is no guarantee that it's going to continue like in the future, but this is what it was for the last 10 years. That's powerful because now you're earning 10% or 9% a year. I think you calculated that Buffett has earned about 61%. You received an email from an individual who took it a step further, and I think he basically said that based on the $1.3 billion that Buffett paid so many years ago, by 2013 anyway, the average coupon now is 61.27%. So in effect, he's getting half of his investment back every year, basically,
right,
his original
right.
investment. I mean, this is power.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah,
that a lot of people don't realize. And I think it's something that people will have to read and go through all the steps.
Right, definitely. So the book is Illustrated Valuations. The author is Dr. Bud Labatan. And so, you know, Bud, how has your writing style evolved in the last 10 years?
Well, when I started out, Steve, that first book that you and I did an interview on, The Four Filters Invention of Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, that book got a little criticism because I used a lot of Buffett and Munger quotes. But I said at the beginning of that book, I was imagining a book that what it would look like if Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger had written it themselves. So my style in those days, about 10 or 11 years ago, was more instructional MBA type of writing. And about a year ago, I had reread Mark Twain's Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, mm-hmm. and trying to think about, you know, what made him such a good writer. So I'm not claiming anything for myself, but I think it made me a little bit more conversational.
Mm-hmm.
And in this book, we have 12 chapters. I tried to hit some themes in each of the 12 chapters, like the Apple, the Disney. I went back and did a historical chapter on the See's Candies valuation,
yeah.
and tried to tell a story there. And then I had a small chapter on temptation and value traps.
Yeah, also inflation and the effects of inflation. I thought that was a good chapter.
Right, mm-hmm. right. That's one of my favorites. I wanted to know how a great company like Pan American World Airways, which was such a dominant airline when I was a kid, how did such a company with an enormous moat go into bankruptcy?
Yeah, yeah.
And came to find out it was several factors like the inflation of the mid to late 70s, the increasing competition of low-cost carriers, and also some political intrigue in there, which the reader will have to read about.
And Buffett had a lot to say about inflation and how it affects companies, and that's you also put that in the book as well. The book is Illustrated Valuations, the author Bud Labatan. It's available on Amazon, Lulu, and BarnesandNoble.com. And to hear this in any interview again, and to ask us questions, we love your questions. Visit our website, stevepomerantz.com, to join the conversation. Sign up for our weekly update where you'll hear this interview again, plus we have a transcribe, plus we have a summary if you're in a hurry. And we do this every single week right into your email inbox.
Can I add just one short?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Sentence for folks that really want to dig deeper into this and wish to purchase the StocksCalc Pro software for Windows, they can go to my website at frips.com, FRIPS.com.
Very good. And don't forget also to go to stevepomerantz.com. Thanks, bud.
Oh, thank you, Steve.